Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had the sheep.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along. It's another edition of Football Family here on the 42 with me, Gavin Cooney. David Snaid is here. Hey, David.
Good afternoon. What's the story?
And Shane Keegan is here as well. How are you, Shane?
How are you keeping, fellas?
So we've loads coming up. We're going to check in with Emma Duffy on the latest from the Ireland Women's National Team camp ahead of the World Cup qualifier in Georgia. That's coming up later in the show along with much else, but... We'll kick off by taking a quick listen to RT Lyric FM.
My famous colleague once upon a time, when he told me that he'd missed out on Euro 88, Ray Houghton putting the ball in the English net. He'd missed out. Certainly he did because he was too young. But his dad also missed out because his mum was expecting him at the time. David Snaid's his name. And he's just sent me a text because he's on his way to play football with his mates, as you do. He said, where some of my Beach Park teammates and myself were in the car on the way to a crucial playoff match to win promotion from Division 3A of the United Churches League. Whoa, Beach Park. Come on, Beach Park. This is the big time, says David. If you could play something suitably ominous for us, that would be much appreciated. No problem if you can't squeeze it. I can squeeze it in. Of course I can, David. Here it comes. Something suitably ominous to get you in the mood to win your way up from Division 3A. Of the United Churches League. Come on, Beach Park.
Go on there, George.
So David, like the media hype machine for Beach Park kicked into gear and went into overdrive at the weekend. So this is what everyone wants to know now. I mean, did you win promotion?
No, we got hockeyed.
Oh.
A suitably disgraceful end to a season considering how the last month went. But a very enjoyable one nonetheless. Good crack. Sunday was spent with a few of the lads in the pub. I'm surprised that I didn't make a show of myself on Twitter because I was absolutely geoid from about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But other than that, yeah, great year.
What happened on the pitch on Saturday?
What happened on the pitch? Our goalkeeper decided to smash a ball at their striker and let them score. Our centre half decided to become the Undertaker and chokeslam one of their strikers as well. And then we could see the 3 goals in the last 10 minutes, I think it was. Haven't been 2-0 up. It wasn't the greatest end, but in fairness, there's a lot of young lads that take some serious learnings from the weekend.
I hope said goalkeeper and said centre half are regular listeners of the Football Family so they can hear themselves getting slammed there.
I don't know. Well, said goalkeeper is training to be a solicitor, and I would not want to be having him defend me. I can tell you that for certain in the near future, if that's what his judgment is like. Which, by the way, I said to him in WhatsApp when he didn't turn up for the end of season drinks. I must say, as I said to the lad who was in charge of the team, it was a great year in terms of just playing a bit of football. We hadn't played football with a team for a good number of years, and yeah, it was a good thing because obviously, it's just a very enjoyable.
How much more interesting would your life be in the media if after you asked every player you've interviewed how the game went and what went wrong, they answered it in the manner that David Snaid just answered? Imagine asking Bruno Fernandes, what went wrong with today's game? Well, De Gea was absolutely useless. He kicked it straight to the centre forward, and Harry Maguire chokeslammed the fella, thought he was the Undertaker.
Well, in fairness, and I should stress, our young centre half was also our player this season. And he's a very good young player. Like, he's only a kid. He's only about 19 or 20, and he's like.
Do you think your massive media PR assault, David, put a little bit too much pressure on? Do you think?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I think that's making excuses. we look at ourselves, Beach Park Seconds. Do you know what I mean? That's the culture that's being created.
On the plus, I'd imagine the sponsors are lining up for shirt sponsorship for next season, surely.
Well, we need a new manager and we need a couple of coaches to come in. So I'll get that out there now.
I'll get the CV out.
In fairness, it'd be one of the few jobs you haven't had. Let's be honest, fucking hell, it's a bleeding bunch of lads having a game of ball in the park, but it was just great crack. It was like, even little things, I know it sounds really stupid, but like, gone to certain places around Dublin that I would have played in when I was younger. I hadn't been, and it just kind of like little flashbacks of when I was a kid playing football and all. It was actually very enjoyable for someone who's 34, and I must stress this while I'm slagging everyone else, without a doubt one of the worst players on the team. Like, so like it's not as if I'm slaughtering lads, I'm not getting slaughtered back. Most certainly am, and I'm taking it as well. But yeah, it's just very enjoyable.
Along with the Beach Park seconds, some of the biggest news of the last week is the fact that Gavin Mizunu has completed his move to Southampton. David, you've been all over this. Can you bring us up to date with the details of the move?
I started getting information while I was in my preparation process for this big game on Saturday, so I was half tempted not to do much with it because it brought a lot of stress level with me when I started getting tweeted from like these Indonesian Man City accounts non-stop. But yeah, no, I think it's been one of them that's been in the mix. I remember we were chatting about it before, but like, I think it was around April time where it became pretty much clear that because of the situation with his contract and how Bazunu was performing for Ireland and also Portsmouth, that a lot of Premier League clubs were interested, clubs in Europe were interested as well. So kind of City kind of had a decision to make about what happens, and I think the fact that Bazunu wanted to play football, and not that he forced the move, but I think making it clear what he wanted kind of maybe sped the progress up of him leaving. And then yeah, over the last, was it, I think it was during the Ukraine game at the Nations League, that kind of got a couple of messages I saw was reported then as well elsewhere about it. And then yeah, just kind of sped up that with Southampton. So it's could be a good move. But then you listen to David Connolly talking about some of the situation with Southampton and the pressure that Ralph Hasenhüttl is going to be under, considering he had to get rid of half his coaching staff and all. So like, on the outside it does look as if it's a very stable club to be going into, but there could be some rumblings in the background as well there that he could be under pressure early on. But Bazunu's going there because he's going to be pretty much challenging to be number one straight away.
What do you think, Shane? Is it a good move?
I think it is, yeah, I think it is. Any situation which could see Bazunu being a regular first team goalkeeper in the Premier League would be fantastic. Looking at Southampton last year, I think over the course of the season, the goalkeeping minutes were pretty much split 50-50 between Forrester and McCarthy, right? Some of that might be down to injuries and stuff, but it doesn't scream, you know, that the manager is convinced by either of the two of them, that's for sure. So I think he does go in there and stand an absolutely brilliant chance of going in and becoming the first choice goalkeeper. And that would just be incredible for his development. I thought he might be, you know, a couple of years and maybe a move or so away from landing himself into that situation just yet. But if that's what's ahead of him over the next 12 months, I think it'll be absolutely fantastic for him. And you'd be inclined to think, from everything we've seen so far, that he would be completely up to the challenge of rising to the occasion as well, you know.
If he does end up as number one, Shane, surely his career path and the decisions that he has made, along with his agents and his family, are kind of a model of the, you know, talented young Irish player going forward, just in terms of, I want to play every week and I'll go wherever I can to make that happen.
Yeah, for ideal model for extremely, extremely talented players. Not everybody has quite the same ability as Gavin has, and also an ideal model for footballers who, like, I'm, you know, I've kind of spoken about it before. I'm massively, massively behind the idea of a player getting his education before he leaves these shores, and Brexit has been a help there. The only thing I will say to caveat that is, I've been involved with a hell of a lot of young footballers who have a whole lot of football talent and less than zero interest in school. But if you are book smart and shown a bit of a head for that side of things, what Bazunu has done is absolutely ideal. It really, really is. And I know we've had the whole which route is better, the Bazunu or Kelleher route. Like, my question with Kelleher would be, you know, last season worked out pretty much as best as it could possibly have worked out for him, all right? If he stays and finds himself in the same situation again this year, it's hard to imagine that he's going to get as many highs and as many games and as many moments in the spotlight as he did last year. Very, very hard to see that. It just played out wonderfully for him last year. Whereas Bazuna was more in control of his own destiny, if that makes sense. By making that move, now it was very much up to within his control. You know, he was going to a club where I'd say he was all but, you know, told you are starting as first choice. It's up to you to hold on to the jersey. And as we say, it's worked out brilliantly for him. But A, because he's chosen a good path, but B, far more so because he's got incredible amount of talent.
David, the prospect of Bazuna ending up back at Man City at some point isn't off the table either, is it?
Yeah, because of the buybacks clause that was put in it. But yeah, so that would obviously complete go full circle, and that would probably be amazing if that was to happen, because then it basically means that the move has obviously worked out well. But like what Shane says, spot on, in the sense that you kind of have to say, yeah, it is a template in terms of going out on loan, getting minutes, and then moving up to the divisions. But the reason why it's worked is purely, I think, down to his level of ability, the mentality he has, the character of the player, do you know what I mean? Otherwise, if it was so simple, that was what everyone would do, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like Rovers are going to do very well out of this. I think it's going to be about the go to 3 million and with Everton all in, if things are different add-ons.
God knows they're stuck for money.
Great for the club. Yeah, you know? But like, it's one of them where his progression and what's happened, it can be used as a way, well, this is what you can do through the League of Ireland by getting in at a first team at a very young age. But I also don't think we can kind of detract as well from the fact that just how good he is, and that's the reason why it has happened so quickly for him. And now it's like at the Friday in Oriel Park chatting to Stephen McPhail after the game, and just saying about him, about, because obviously he'd known him, they had Bazuna in training in around the first team at 14, so they've known him for like quite a number of years, 6-7 years now. And just saying that every time he has a challenge, he kind of rises to it, he kind of deals with it and knows how to kind of, well, meet a head on sort of thing. And that's what we're hoping now he can maintain and do in the Premier League, because there will be a completely different level of scrutiny on him now as well, you know what I mean? Which could be good and bad, because we'll be highlighting that. I think you can kind of get caught, can't you? We kind of get caught maybe in a lone little bubble and say, we see what he's like, and you kind of say, well, why is no one else raving about him, blah, blah, blah. Whereas now you might get that sense where people will see how good and what he's capable of, but then also there's the other element where what mistakes, because it's bound to happen, they're bound to be made, no one's perfect, you know what I mean? And then how he reacts to them as well.
Nathan Collins, will he be at Burnley next season? It would appear not. He was a bit not. I asked him in the mix zone after the game against Ukraine and Poland, and he was fairly non-committal. He said he didn't know where he'd be at the start of next season. Then did kind of brush it off by saying, "But sure, I don't know where I'll be in 10 days." Reports in the Irish Sun linking him with a move from to Leicester and to Wolves. It seems that Burnley will need to sell up, because their financial situation is fairly dire, and Collins is one of the most saleable assets that they have. A question from Joe in the WhatsApp group that I'll throw to you, Shane. Would it be better or worse for Ireland and Nathan Collins to have a season competing near the top of the Championship and working with Vincent Kompany at Burnley, or to have a move to a bottom half Premier League team where he'd be fighting for his place?
Yeah, it's a good question. It is. I saw it coming in there and it got me thinking to myself. Again, like, it'll all be based on hindsight, won't it? Because if he could get into a Premier League side and nail down a place there, it would be, I think it would be fantastic for his development. I really, really do. And yes, there will be more competition for places, but it's hard again not to get excited about the talent, Gavin. It really, really is. It's actually, I was trying to see, right, which of those two clubs would I prefer him to go to if he was going to get a move to one of the two, right? The situations are remarkably similar, Gav, right? Because both sides bounce between 4 at the back and 3 at the back in terms of centre halves, let's call it, or 4 at the back and 5 at the back, whichever way you want to call it. We know what we're talking about, right? And in both clubs, the problem seemed to be that I think both managers favoured the idea of 3 centre-halves, but were never able to find a convincing third centre-half, if that makes sense. So anytime Leicester wanted to go to 3 centre-halves, they kept having to bring back in Amarty. And I don't think Rodgers was ever convinced on him. And he'd quickly kind of revert back to a back four because he felt he couldn't trust him. And almost the exact same thing was happening with Wolves. Max Kilman was the one who kept coming in. Anytime they changed from the four, they always had Cody and who was the other one? I can't think off the top of my head. They always had Cody plus Yeah, yeah. Sice and Cody were always there. And then if they went to three at the back, it was Kilman would come in. And again, he never quite convinced. So I can completely and utterly see why both of those clubs might be interested in Nathan Collins, because he is a centre-half. Not only is he a centre-half with huge potential who comes in and could be your convincing extra option, but he's a guy who has been convincing for Ireland in a back three and in two different positions within a back three. So he makes a hell of a lot of sense for either of those two clubs. And I do think, Gav, I think there'd be a real chance if he went to either of those clubs that he would nail himself down as a first-team regular. If I was in his ear, I'd probably push him to try and see what he could do there.
David, any thoughts on Nathan Collins? Do you think a move is necessary for him?
See, it depends. As like Shane touched on there a little bit with what the money worries and the money situation with Borney, because remember that report, wasn't it, in The Guardian, about like there's like a fairly hefty payment due in terms of on the debt that would have been loaded onto the club when they were purchased if they got relegated, which has obviously happened. Like listening to Vince and company, it seems as if he's being sold as if that he won't have to sell anybody immediately if they want them for this project that's required. You saw some of the clips from Borney being back in pre-season today, but I know obviously Collins is still in giving time off to go on holiday. I don't know, it's a strange one, because again, like, he's only gone 21, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's one of them where in football, yeah, you kind of strike while you're hot, I suppose, and get your move. But like, if you're looking at company from the point of view of maybe an up-and-coming manager, they obviously played in the same position, you would think, geez, he could learn a lot from someone like Vincent Kompany. You would think. But then look at Brendan Rodgers, for example, his track record as a coach. But look at the problems they have defensively. Will he make him a better defender?
I was just going to raise that. I can't think of a defender who's really thrived under Rodgers. It's always the attacking players who've improved under him.
Yeah, and listen, that might be the fact, and this might be very, very obvious, but maybe having better defenders will help having a better defence. Do you know what I mean? As well, like in terms of set pieces and defending set pieces, that was a big issue for Leicester City last season, you know, the goals they conceded from set pieces. You would imagine in that Leicester team as well, like his levels of deep completions will be thrilling. And then at Wolves as well, like Wolves last year were kind of built off defensive solidity too. Like Bruno Lage seems to be a very kind of organised manager, maybe a bit more so than Rodgers in terms of defensive and that structure of things. I don't know if that the two things correlate. Surely you would, the fact that how vulnerable sometimes Leicester do look. But as you say, Gav, like, a lot of the positive stuff that happens with Leicester seems to be in the middle to top end of the pitch rather than at the back. And so it's just about weighing it up. Like, does he kind of say, well, do you know what? I'll give Burnley a year. Because he might go there and be not told he was going to be guaranteed to play or whatever. Or company might say to him, I'm literally going to be building this promotion charge around you. You can't imagine that's going to affect him with Ireland playing. It won't. If he's playing regularly for Burnley in the Championship, he'll be playing regularly for Ireland. Without a doubt. But I genuinely at this stage, because we don't know 100% what's being offered on the table and what's the kind of path for him, it's hard to actually say exactly at the moment. But if you're kind of thinking about how you learn as a defender and how you probably go to Wolves, because it seems as if they're a bit more solid at the back. They were last season anyway, then Leicester. Although things did tail off from their season, kind of felt a bit towards the end, didn't it?
Yeah. Hey, Collins probably isn't in as dire a need. I'm overstating things there. In as much of a need of a move as some of his international teammates. Shane, I'm thinking. I was just trying to jot down a list of players just off the top of my head who I feel kind of do need a move this summer. Shane Duffy, Jeff Hendrick, Jason Knight all came to
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, I think we went through it here. Could have been last week or the week before. I think a huge amount of the current Irish squad are in situations where they're not entirely sure that they're a nailed-on starter for the following season. Like, you've named a few there. Like, you could go with bigger names than that too, Gav. Like where's Shane Duffy at the moment? Where's Seamus Coleman? For all Lampard's praise of him at the end of the season, is Seamus Coleman a nailed-on starter? It's an absolutely massive, massive summer for Irish players in terms of whether they stay where they are, if they go where they do go. And it is going to have a big, big impact on Ireland's, you know, how Ireland, whether we hit the ground running when we come back into the next set of games or not. You want to see as many of that kind of core 18, let's call it 8, kind of core 22 nearly at this stage in terms of players that are really in contention for starting jerseys for us. And yeah, some of them are going to need some good agents over the summer. You'd like to see as many of them as possible prioritising minutes, that's for sure. But as I say, it's like the list of players who are settled and know that they're definitely going to be at their club and definitely a starter for the club is a hell of a lot shorter than the list of players who are possibly eyeing up a move this summer. I think we'll see a huge amount of Irish players moving somewhere.
Well, a couple of moves that have happened involving Irish players. Carl Heffernan's loan move to AC Milan from Cork is permanent now. So he's sticking around in Milan for a while.
How long before he's dislodging Nathan Collins? ended Nathan Collins' international career.
And we just centre backs. We're absolutely stacked with centre backs.
See, you should have even talking, Gav. Wasn't it Neil O'Riordan is reporting that Nathan Collins' replacement at Burnley is going to be Luke McNally, recently of Pats and Drogheda in the League of Ireland, yeah.
Because he was linked with Spurs as well. Talk of him going to... It's amazing though how, like, lads... Because again, even remembering him at Pats, like, he stood out a little bit, but like, I don't know, maybe it's just sometimes... Sometimes lads, when you get an opportunity, they just thrive in certain scenarios and situations and just are able to take different leaps. And just interesting how different, it's just a reminder that there is no set way. Like we talked about earlier about Bazunu and say with Kelleher and their paths, but different players just thrive in different environments sometimes, you know.
Gab, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to call it exactly breaking news now, considering we're on a podcast and it'll be well old news by, but I've been slightly distracted here for the last 5 minutes watching the FAI Cup draw.
Oh, right, okay. We'll come to that later on in the show. I do just on the subject of St. Pat's centre halves, I mean, Sam Curtis is another one. Okay, they signed him from Rovers. He's unique in the sense he's Rovers' youngest ever player in the League of Ireland, and he's also Pat's youngest ever player in the League of Ireland. He's been playing at right back, right wing back, if I'm right off the top of my head, lately. And Neil O'Riordan, the Irish Sun, he's been linked to the move to Feyenoord.
Yeah, look, it'd be that would be a very, very interesting one. I think I think it might be something to discuss before. I'd love to see more players moving to the continent. Obviously, it's a knock-on effect of Brexit, but I just think, even before Brexit kicked in, I just think there's a real, real strong argument to be made for the players going off and getting a different kind of education and arguably a more rounded football and education by going somewhere different. Now, it probably takes a slightly different kind of character, a bolder character to go to the likes of a Feyenoord rather than something that, you know, might seem a hell of a lot more simple, like a Burnley or something like that, let's call it. But there's huge opportunity for them to learn and go out there. I'd love to see it happen. He looks a fantastic player, Gavin. He looks an absolutely fantastic player to be thrown in that young, I suppose, by two different clubs. Kind of tells it's similar to, I think, Evan Ferguson. Is Evan Ferguson Bohemian's youngest ever player? And Brighton Hove Albion's youngest ever player.
I'm trying to think though. I know he came on against Chelsea, didn't he, when he was like 14 in that friendly.
He did play League of Ireland, all right. And was denied a goal. He scored a goal, and it was ruled out for some absolute joke of a refereeing call, if I remember rightly.
That's unlike the League of Ireland.
And sorry, lastly on the subject of transfers. It's like blast from the past, but Luke O'Connell, if we remember him, midfielder who was part of the Republic of Ireland squad for a training camp under Mick McCarthy in Portugal in the summer of 2019, went to Celtic and his career kind of hit the rock. So he's now signed on a 3-year deal with Barnsley. So maybe an element of him kickstarting his career. I don't know. Have you seen much of him? I just remember him breaking through, being like, "Oh, this is the kind of midfielder that we're."
Yeah, no, I don't think any of us would have seen a huge amount of him because, as you say, he hasn't kind of, you know, he's the sort of one that he's like your Freddie Adu. He's the one you've read a hell of a lot about, but you've hardly ever seen him kick a ball, I'd imagine, you know?
I've seen him, a few little clips of him on social media where he's like, I think he scored. Who was he on loan in Scotland? Remember he went on a loan, had a loan move.
Queen's Park, I think, was it?
Well, I think he scored like a great goal or something and then a couple of nice little passes, but... But then again, that's gonna be a serious test for him going into a club like Barnsley. It's a big club in that area, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's gonna be serious demands and expectations on him there. So see how he goes. But let's be honest, to get that move, is it a 3-year deal as well? So it's not even as if they're saying, right, come in for the year and see how you go. Like, they seem to be taking a bit of a, I don't know, the long game approach slightly with it. To get a 3-year deal, having not kicked the ball really for Celtic's first team, having parted about for them really, that's like, they're showing a bit of faith in them there. So
On the international front, the draw has been made for the under-21 European Championship playoffs. Ireland have been drawn against Israel. It's a two-legged playoff. Ireland are at home first. The games will be played in the window between September 19th and September 27th. Israel finished second in their group, obviously behind Germany, and they finished a point ahead of Poland. We didn't get too much time, Shane, to drill into this, but on the face of things, this looks one of the more favourable draws that Ireland might have got.
Any of the three of us know where to claim to be an expert in the Israel under-21 side, we'd be showing up, our lives would be showing up fairly quickly. On the surface, it looks like a decent draw. You look at some of the others and you're just going by football and traditions, you'd imagine we've done reasonably well to avoid some slightly bigger names. Just had a quick jump in, as you say, I think you were saying where they finished in their group table and that. I mean, they wrapped things up with a 2-0 win over San Marino, but they'd made things a little bit dicey for themselves in that they'd lost their second last game against Latvia. So I mean, that, you know, that doesn't make them seem like a powerhouse. That said, previous to that, only beaten 1-0 by Germany. So maybe they're a little bit like ourselves, Gav. They might be decent at shutting up shop and putting it up to the big boys, but struggle to break down some of the smaller ones. I don't know too many of the names in the squad. I was looking through it. I don't think any player scored more than 2 goals in their qualifying campaign. They seem to be kind of shared around the group. So look, it looks on the surface to be a decent draw, but I think the wider conversation is what Ireland under-21 team takes to the pitch for those games.
You've preempted Joe McCarthy's question in the WhatsApp group. With the under-21 playoff draw later today, should any eligible player from the senior squad be moved down to the 21?
It's kind of already been answered. Like, Jim Crawford's already spoken about it, that he feels the lads who have got Ireland to this point are the ones who deserve to have to go at doing it.
Would you be tempted to fight your corner if you're Crawford to get as many as you could down? Like, I mean, these are the biggest games.
But the biggest games in the 21's history, right? But it doesn't matter. Like, a Nations League game for the seniors is of more importance, in my opinion, than the 21's getting to, like, especially considering they've already got to this point. It's not as if a lot of the lads are played the first half of a campaign and then got promoted during it. Like, these are the players who've actually been in that campaign.
Right, but let's say, what happens then if all the eligible players stay up with the seniors, right? The seniors draw at home to Armenia and lose away to Scotland, and the 21s are comprehensively beaten over 2 legs against Israel. Are we not all then going, well, what was the point in that? And like, I think it would be fantastic for the 21s. Whatever way to get there, however to get the result to get, you know, we can argue. But for them to be at a major tournament would be fantastic for the players' development. Absolutely brilliant for the players' development. I would be pushing it. I think you're right. I don't think it'll happen. I hadn't seen those Jim Crawford comments. But even before you called them out, I would have thought, yeah, he probably will just stick with what he has, because, you know, he's happy enough, you know, loyalty will be built up there. He's happy enough to stick with what he has. Stephen is definitely happy with that because he has his strongest team to play for. But as somebody outside that bubble, as somebody outside Jim Crawford or Stephen Kenny, me personally, I would love to see a couple of the players drop down. I would love to see a couple of the players drop down.
But I mean, is that not all kind of theoretical though? Like, if you took all the 21s out of the senior squad, surely Ireland would lose to both Scotland and Armenia. Like, they actually couldn't get... I actually can't think.
Maybe I'm being unfair.
It
couldn't be all of them. We wouldn't be left with the starting 11 at the moment, so we wouldn't. But
right, I'll tell you what. You are Jim Crawford. You've been granted 3 players. The compromise
wishes,
is you can get 3 players down. Which 3 do you pick?
Okay, so it's not... That's not the angle I would come at it from is those that aren't likely to start for the senior team. Could they not be freed up to instead start for the 21s?
Okay, but like who? Festi Abasele would probably... Okay, I'll give you Festi, like.
But also, this is the thing, man, like, and let's be honest, like, what happens, how the season starts as well, do you know what I mean? say, like Ferguson, what if he rips it up in pre-season for Brighton and all of a sudden is in and around the mix to be playing for Brighton? There's, and he's actually, let's say for example, a mad scenario, but Ferguson scores in the first few games of the season in the Premier League for Brighton. Like, Stephen Kenny's well within his rights to
call him 100%. Up. Call him
the
up.
The first team has to take priority. I know it's great and they're in an amazing position, but like, when you, once you're in around that first team squad, like, I don't think it's right that you should be just dropping down just to try and do lads a favour. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to kind of maintain that balance and maintain that. There has to be a little bit of a separation in terms of lads who have actually earned that right to call themselves senior internationals to then say, here, actually, well, the lads below us need a dig out. Not that it's like throwing a couple of bangers down, because they're obviously, like, it's not like that, but I just mean, I just genuinely think from lads in the seniors who see themselves, like, I tell you one thing, my club of family won't be going down. He's already made that clear. But on that point, like, just like lads who are now, who've been given that platform by Stephen Kenny and have come through even with the 21s and gotten in, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, actually, do you know what, these Nations League games, do you know what, we just give those lads a dig out. I just think that creates the wrong, it'd be different if there was like an injury crisis or something, and like, say, a lot of lads, if there was a few lads in the 21s who wouldn't be nailed on starters, who've been involved in the camp and they weren't available, and then you were really struggling for numbers and thinking, well, do you know what, we've got to this situation where we're in a playoff, we actually just need a serious dig out here, then I think it's well within their rights to say, well, listen, we need a couple of lads here who might not play. But if not, then you need lads who are, if they're part of the first team plans, have to stay with the first team. Especially because you've got competitive games. It would be different if it was friendlies. If it was friendlies, then you could make it a bit more of an argument for it a little bit. But when it's competitive games and it's important, then I think they should stay with the first team personally.
Hey, we'll move on. The Republic of Ireland women's national team face Georgia in a World Cup qualifier next Monday. A win will put them second in the group and a point clear of Finland. And this is their game in hand on Finland. As part of their preparations, the squad are in a training camp in Turkey right now. And the 42's Emma Duffy joins us to bring us up to speed on how that has been going. Emma, considering Ireland won the return game against Georgia in Dublin 11-0, they must be pretty confident ahead of this game.
Yeah, I'd imagine they are, Gav. Obviously, the interviews so differently. It's the usual, you know, taking every game as it comes, no complacency, etc., etc. But the truth of the matter is that, yeah, Ireland won 11-0 last time in Tala. Georgia are complete minnows of the group. 6 games, 6 defeats, 41 goals conceded and 0 scored. I think their heaviest defeat was 15-0 to Sweden just before Ireland played Sweden, and they lost 6-0 to Finland last time out. So yeah, look, a win is, let's say, guaranteed. But there are going to be a few little different challenges coming into this game. It's obviously over there, so the heat is expected to be fairly brutal. So the squad are in Turkey for a training camp at the minute. I think Georgia are hoping to have a few players back. I think when they played Ireland last time, they were hit with COVID, so they were probably weakened a little bit, but let's be honest, they were very, very poor in Tala that night. And then as well, the other thing is that I suppose a lot of the Irish players are out of season. But look, they're professional athletes, and this is their job at the end of the day. So I'd imagine a pretty convincing win again.
There, I mean, that was a problem for the men's team, the time off between the end of the club season and the beginning of these internationals. Now, in some cases, for that was generally around a month to 5 or 6 weeks, in some cases for the men's team. Even longer for the women's team. Like, is that much of a concern? Because this game is next Monday, the final Monday in June.
Yeah, I think maybe if it was another team or a higher ranked nation, it might be. But in this circumstance, I don't think it really is. You know, there are some players still in season. You look at Denise O'Sullivan lighting it up for North Carolina over the weekend. She actually missed a friendly game. They played against the Philippines while on training camp in Turkey. But I suppose that was kind of, you know, the whole idea behind that game, to get players back in the rhythm. A lot of the Irish team play in the Women's Super League in England, so they're obviously on a pretty extended break at the minute. A lot of them have been on holidays in the past few weeks, but you know, they looked fairly lively on Sunday, albeit the heat was definitely a big challenge. And then you look at the Women's National League players, you know, it's a pretty short mid-season break for them, so they're not going to fall too much out of routine. So yeah, it definitely probably will be a factor. in some sense, but I don't think it'll be absolutely crucial in the long run of things.
You mentioned the Women's National League players. Among them is Stephanie Roach, back in the squad for the first time in 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Super to see Stephanie back. She's been lighting it up with P-Mount week on week. You know, she's a fantastic finisher. Obviously, scores goals for fun in the Women's National League, but definitely that step up to international again, you know, it's a little bit cruel at times. And she got a half against the Philippines on Sunday. Looked decent, had a pretty good chance. Couldn't get the ball out from her feet properly. Keeper got it and it rebounded to Lily Ag, who put it away on her debut. And that just shows, I suppose, the fine margins at international level. But yeah, fantastic to see Steph back in the fold. Obviously brings a wealth of experience, having played all over the world too. And, you know, she is that kind of leader or talismanic figure. She's really good with the younger girls, and even just her presence alone in the squad is fantastic. And I know she did a little bit of media last week and spoke about, you know, thinking that she'd never get the chance again, so she's obviously gonna grab it with both hands. And you can just see how much she enjoys, you know, top level football, and just being in the mix again. It's great to see.
Another new face is Lily Ag, who scored the winner in that friendly against the Philippines. What can you tell us about her?
Yeah, so Lily Ag is a midfielder. She's playing with London City Lionesses. She's actually a qualified lecturer as well, which I only found out very recently. Pretty impressive. But yeah, she's a pretty lively player. She looked good from what I saw on Sunday. I suppose just adds a new dimension, I guess, in the middle. Herself and Megan Connolly were kind of playing more of a holding role, but I think Vera said it after the game that she can play that really, really well. She kind of sees her as a six, making things happen from behind, and then once she sees an opportunity or that moment to get into the box, she'll go and take it. She can read a game fairly well, and obviously her finish wasn't the most difficult one in the world, but she made no mistake with it, and to score a goal on your debut is pretty nice. I know she's had a tough time with injury the last while, so she actually trained with the squad in April 2021, and then her first official call-up was for the Sweden camp in April gone by. She wasn't in the matchday squad that day, but obviously it's all experience. So yeah, I forgot to mention there as well, she was born in Brighton. And she qualifies for Ireland through her grandmother, who's from Cork. So yeah, excited to see what Lily Ag can bring to the team. Obviously Vera has unearthed quite a few Irish qualified players. Lucy Quinn, probably the most high profile of them all. So it'll be interesting to see if Ag can follow in Quinn's footsteps.
Denise O'Sullivan, it's you to link up with the squad right now, I think, having not played against the Philippines. Are Ireland at full strength for the Georgia game?
Are they? Good question. I suppose as full strength as they can be. Obviously, as mentioned previously, the fact that players are out of season, it's a little bit difficult. There are a few injuries, obviously long-term ones like Savannah McCarthy. But, you know, Ireland's defence has come on leaps and bounds in the last while. And to see Deanne Caldwell back in there on Sunday, getting 90 minutes under her belt, after a really good end to the season with Manchester United is great to see. There's a few other injuries. I think Leanne Kiernan is out at the minute too. A few other girls in the Women's National League too, Saoirse Noonan. I know she's getting back to her brilliant best, most definitely, but she struggled in the early stages of the season with injury too. So yeah, I suppose from what's available, definitely at full strength. You say Denise O'Sullivan there, and you know, just have to mention that absolute rocket she scored at the weekend. It'd be nice if she could do that again now next week. She scored three against Georgia last time, so I'd imagine she'll be hoping to repeat the hat-trick feat. Katie McCabe looked pretty good last week as well, only got a half too, but you know, always dangerous down that left hand side. And the last time Ireland played Georgia, they really exploited them there, and they couldn't live with McCabe down the left. So, you know, I'd imagine we'll see more of the same now next week.
Georgia game is a must win, Emma, but it sounds like it's a will win.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way of putting it, Gav. I suppose it's all about this double header in September against Finland at home and then Slovakia away. But yeah, I suppose it's a little bit tough to get excited for the Georgia game, because it probably is going to be a very convincing win. But yeah, a must win, a will win. If they win, they will leapfrog Finland into second place. Ireland will have 11 points, Finland will have 10, and they'll both be level on games. So both on 6 games, Ireland have a game in hand at the moment. So yeah, adds to it all now for September, and things will really spice up for then. But obviously, you know, Ireland are most certainly taking it one game at a time and not thinking about September. Can guarantee you that much.
Yeah, well, we'll hear about how that Georgia game goes. It's live on RTE2 television next Monday night. And Emma, you'll be back with us on the podcast next week to review it all. Emma, thanks very much.
Thanks a million, Gav.
Hey, thanks very much, Emma. As Shane alluded to earlier on the show, we've got the first round row for the FAI Cup. Ties to be played weekending July 31st. I'll rattle through them all. Cove Ramblers, Cork City, Tralee United, Usher Celtic FC, Salt Hill Devon against Malahide United, Sligo Rovers against Wexford, Dundalk against Longford Town, Lucan United against Colestra Donnycarney, Bonagie United against Pike Rovers, Derry City against Oliver Bond Celtic, UCD against Cockhill Celtic, Drogheda United against Athlone Town, St Pat's against Waterford, Finn Harps against Bowes, Bray Shelburne, Bangor against Shamrock Rovers, Bluebell United against Galway United, and Maynooth University Town against Villa FC. So only one old Premier Division tie in there, and that's Bohemians drawn away to Finn Harps. So if Bowes are going to go one step closer and win the cup, having come so close last season, they probably got the most difficult first round draw in that draw. And wish to do so.
They'll be able to wear their cup jersey up there, will they, either, because of clashes. So imagine that they lose, fuck's sake, Branham. You know what I mean? A jersey that you can't wear in your first game, and if you get knocked out, then you're out of the cup.
Imagine somebody putting the call in Dolly Horgan. Ollie, would you mind wearing your away jersey so we can wear our blue? Best of luck to whoever's putting that call.
So Derry's in the league. Derry's title challenge is wilting. I sang their praises after they walloped Pats 4-0 at Inchicore a while ago. They've now gone 7 games without a win since then, held by Drogheda. But now Dundalk are only 5 points behind Shamrock Rovers with a game in hand, thanks to their 1-0 win against Rovers at Oriel Park on Friday night. Shane, can Dundalk last the pace? Are they going to make this a title race?
Dundalk are doing absolutely superbly, Gavin. They're doing... They're doing better than I would have expected. I would suggest they're doing better possibly than their manager would have expected, to be honest with you. I think this was, in my head anyway, it was a kind of a settling in period. Obviously being a club legend, I think if he was kind of tipping in and around, picking up that fourth spot, everybody at Dundalk would have been quite happy with how the season would have went. But they find themselves in a fantastic position. Can they actually go and push Rovers for the title? I don't think so, despite the result. I keep saying Rovers are going to win the league comfortably, and they're kind of trying to make a fool of me by not winning the league comfortably. But the fact that Derry have already fallen away, I think Dundalk may at some stage experience a period that Derry are currently going through. Dundalk are absolutely maximising themselves at the moment. They're absolutely maximising themselves. I think the amount of 1-0 wins they've had, there's a hell of a lot of them there, to the best of my knowledge, without looking down through the results now. I think there's a fair few there. I think they're doing brilliantly. They're maximising themselves. Can they keep it going for almost the whole second half of the season? I wouldn't have thought so. But everybody up there must be ecstatic as to where they are. It looks as though there's going to be no fear whatsoever of missing out on Europe for them, and that's mean Stevie is doing a super job. I would have questioned at the start of the year, Gav, whether Stevie was making the right decision, to be honest with you. I thought Pats were kind of, you know, the Pats team he had there looked very good. They were obviously a season and a half into their progression under him as a manager, and I also would have thought Pat's budget would be bigger than Dundalk's budget. I would have thought. I'm not sure now. But yeah, I would have questioned, is he making the right move here? Is he not putting himself on the back foot by kind of starting from scratch all over again? I understand the lure of being a club legend at the club and all that, and I'm sure that probably was what pushed him towards it in the end. And I think probably the new owners would have put a convincing case to him. But yeah, it appears I'm wrong. He's right. He's made a great move, and it seems to be working out extremely well for all concerned at the moment.
He also seems to be developing a knack, which is good for a manager, of being able to kind of make an impact very quickly with a group of players, like, is what Pat's players talked about, and even what is clear with Dundalk in terms of, like, he's kind of able to revitalise things pretty sharpish and get a strong bond a little bit.
Yeah, the initial Pat's results weren't fantastic, David. The initial Pat's results weren't fantastic. I remember when, because I remember very clearly one conversation, right, where I was on the side, we were training up at Dundalk, right, and Patrick McElhenney had an injury. It was coming towards the end of the season.
Right.
And myself and Patrick were chatting away, and we just started talking about coaching. And I said to him, is it something you can see yourself doing? And he said, oh, absolutely. He said, it's definitely something that I'm obsessed with football. I want to get into it. He says, the only thing is I don't know what sort of person it takes to be successful. He says, when Stevie was here, he said, I would have said, there's the most nailed on successful manager that you're ever likely to see. And the point he was making at the time was, and I look at Stevie now and he's really struggling. And he was. Pats were going. It didn't take off wonderfully. It was that whole half a season where he went in there. Initially, I think it was.
Barely scored.
Well, yeah. He did find it tough going, but he has certainly found his way in the game now. That's for sure as a manager.
And what are those qualities
that
McElhenney was ascribing to him that he believed would make him a good manager? McElhenney's is going to be right in the long term,
yeah.
I think.
Asher, look, yeah. Gav, I think he's just one of these fellas who has leader printed across his forehead for all the world. You know, I think the way he carries himself, the way he communicates, I think it was clear to everybody up there that he was a deep thinker about the game. Sure, I think Shieldsy has passed the comment that Shieldsy was sharing a house with the two of them, and the two of them were sharing a room, and Shieldsy said he used to have to bang on the wall to get the two of them to shut up talking about football so he could go to sleep at night time, like himself and O'Donnell and Higgins were, you know, just obsessed and never stopped talking about it. So yeah, look, everybody at Dundalk would have, you know, seen him as a guy who was likely to be successful, but for anybody it takes a bit of time, and it's also not all plain sailing. I'm sure Stevie will have hard times like any manager has as well, no matter how good you are. There's only one guarantee in football management, Gavin. That's that you'll most likely get your P45 on at least one or two occasions across your career, you know.
But that was interesting though as well, and like, well, I say interesting, but in terms of signings, like, obviously you need to make recruitment is obviously so important. But like a signing like Mark Connolly could have gone one way or the other in terms of a lad coming back, and it's gone the right way for him in terms of performances on the pitch, but also around the dressing room. Like, he was very good. He was very good against Rovers the other night. But even then, speaking to O'Donnell afterwards, and even speaking to a couple of people about Connolly afterwards, just about the impact he's had a very positive one. Do you know what I mean? And that's one of the things that hasn't happened at Dundalk in the last few years, maybe with some recruitment with his big fella signings coming in, and maybe not having that same level of impact. And again, I think Connolly is one who's kind of stepped up, which has been a big thing for him. But some of what Shane was saying earlier about transfers, one of the things that's interesting, even in terms of the market, would be wages in Scotland, like, in terms of using that market, have gone up quite a lot. Do you know what I mean? So, like, if you're going into that market, there's lads in Scotland expecting X, Y, and Z now, and then, like, maybe before it wasn't quite as expensive. So, like, clubs would be looking in around that market now as well. That's something that's kind of cropped up too, which could be a hindrance to getting bodies in over the summer, because I think for the Dock, that's what's key, is getting that quality in rather than just bodies for the sake of it, because they're at the top end of the table now. Like, they are challenging for the league, like Daniel Kelly spoke about when he got the Soccer Writers Player of the Month. Like, Anne O'Donnell fronted up and said, yeah, well, yeah, we are. We're challenging now, but it's about maintaining that, and that's what you have to try and do. And you have to do that by making sure the bodies to get in are of sufficient quality, because if you bring them in and they lower that bar, that could be a bigger concern.
Elsewhere, last Friday, as I mentioned, Derry Hill by Drogheda, Bowes 1-0 winners over Shells at Dalymount. The John Russell era at Sligo, meanwhile, is off to a flying start with a 3-0 win against Finn Harps. Pats beat UCD 2-1, a game in which Andy Myler and his assistant Willie O'Connor were sent off for protesting the non-sending off of Sam Curtis for a foul in that game. In the First Division, Cork drew at Longford, and then Galway hammered Bray 5-1, so now it's Galway who lead the league by a point. The other big news in the domestic front last week was the confirmation of the appointment of Mark Canham as the FAI's new director of football. That was widely expected. We've reported on the 42. We talked about it on the show before. What was less expected is the fact that John Morling is back at the FAI in the role of senior football consultant. Morling was widely regarded as an initial rival of Canham's for this position. He has worked at the FAI before as an under 15, under 16, and under 17 manager of the men's underage national teams. The director of football role is a replacement for the high performance director that was held by Rude Doctor. It's a huge role. It's widely seen as more significant than, you know, Stephen Kenny or Vera Powell's roles. Shane, what's your reaction to these appointments, and if you've got any further reaction from the ground among your constellation of academy coaches?
No, look, as you say, it's no surprise that the Mark Canham one was kind of. You know, flagged from quite a while out. Look, I think there has been a general opinion around the place that in an ideal world you would love to have seen this role given to an Irishman. I think there are a lot of Irish people who could potentially have done a very good job in the role. I'm not sure that there was one absolute standout candidate that everybody would universally say, yep, he would have been perfect for it. I think any Irishman who would have come into the role would have, you know, history and background and all that would have been drudged up, and it'd be very, very hard for an Irishman to come in and probably take on the role and do some of the things that need to be done, in the same way that, as we say, in the same way that Doctor managed to kind of essentially change the whole landscape of underage Irish football. I know nothing about Mark Canham, really. You guys have probably done a good bit of research around him. You probably know a hell of a lot more. John Morling, I know an awful lot more about. I would have had young Irish players from the kind of areas I would have been working in playing under John's underage teams. I went to Portugal for 3 days, believe it or not. One of my young players, Mikey Drennan, had met an Irish under 16 squad that John was the manager of, and I was kind of so into the whole underage scene back then that I booked a 3-day holiday around them going off to play in a tournament out there. So spent a good bit of time around the training ground watching them train under John and built up a decent relationship with John at the time. Further down the track, then I would have used that relationship to bring one of his young Brighton players, Jonah Iunga, at the time across. He actually came across to Sligo initially, but then I brought him to Galway after that. So he's a guy I would talk to the odd time. Very, very impressive man. You know, real kind of real, real strong on detail, real, real strong on prep, all of that kind of thing. He's got a kind of a no-nonsense demeanor about him as well. It's a strange one. It is a strange one. You're looking and you're going, was this always an intention? Was there always going to be a second role, or is it that they've found two outstanding candidates and they can't give it a both, so they've come up with a new role for the second one? It is a strange situation, but you'd like to think it is one that can still work out for the benefit of football here.
Yeah, I'm being cynical in fairness in saying, to be clear, the FAI haven't used the phrase dream ticket, but we've heard a lot of dream tickets before in terms of in management and coaching side of things, and it's never really worked out. You know, senior football consultant, this actually reminded me a bit of Bobby Robson and Steve Staunton, to be quite honest with you, that there is an element of, you know, like Morling will be able to introduce Canham and kind of give him background and help him navigate the very unique football landscape that he's working on. David, I don't know if you have any further opinions to add on this. I suppose it is early. Canham's not starting till August, and then we'll get a better read on how things are going.
Yeah, like, and always in Fennel, Paul Fennessy working on a piece about as well, which will have a lot more, hopefully have a lot more detail about what he's like as a person working and how he operates. So it'll be interesting to hear that. But I don't know, that did strike me, the whole thing. Like, I even was thinking there of the whole succession plan, even in the first place with Stephen Kenny and Mick McCarthy, and I know it was a different time in the FAI. But it did, like, It does strike me as a bit strange. But like, one of the first messages I got was about Morling, and was from someone at Brighton saying that, like, they need someone like him in there in terms of, and it was interesting what Shane said about that level of detail, because that seems to be one of the things that he's very strong on and all the rest of it, and maybe something that could have been lacking. But I kind of wonder, And it's a good point as well that Shane made, because like, I remember our speaking to Vincent Butler, who'd be very kind of big on the DDSL side of things with Belvedere and doing a piece around youth football. And like, you felt a lot of sympathy listening to him in terms of what happened with Belvo and how things had changed. But then you also kind of got the sense that things need to change and how things have been operating and how it's working and how Irish football should be operating. And like, I think it was a good thing that maybe Doctor had got that separation from a lot of the, for want of a better word, shit that does go on with any kind of underage sport and all the rest of it. That was a good thing. But then there were certain maybe aspects of it that maybe he didn't quite understand culturally when you listen to some people, which again, like, I don't really think that's necessarily a bad thing. Like, I know there's obviously, you have to understand your environment that you're in and all, but having that separation, I think, and coming at it from the point of view, well, what's the best for football is not a bad thing, really, like in terms of what's best practice. So that's what you would hope, is that someone like Canham, who's been involved in the Premier League and who's been involved at a top level in England in the modern game, and knows what, I don't know, Shane will have a better idea in terms of trends for what's going to be coming, what's how things should be operating and how they're working. That makes sense. But then he's going to get in and he's going to realise that these aren't going to, like, the amount of challenges in terms of financial and personnel in these academies are completely different to then the academies that are getting backed by millions in England. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a very different infrastructure and kind of landscape there for them to be operating.
Yeah, we'll see how it shakes out. It has to work, basically. Shane, you were down at Kennedy Cup over last week. Tell us about who are the next bright young things for Irish football.
Some throw-ins.
I feel so sorry. I feel so sorry for that young lad. Like, because I remember, right, on Tuesday, he did that on Tuesday, and the way it was set, and rightly so, by the way, the way they set it up now down there is nobody, literally only players and the staff that are with the club, with the teams, are allowed inside the cages. So you have to stay outside the cage, which means at times you can be quite a distance away from the pitch. And I remember watching Clare against Carlo on the Tuesday. And like, Clare got a throw in the final third. This young lad picks up the ball, runs up, does a somersault, and launches the ball in near the back post. And nobody gasped, or nobody went, oh my God. Or I'm standing there going, hold on, have people seen this? Or did people miss it? Or, and I turned to the fella beside me and I went, oh my God, did you see that? And he kind of nonchalantly went, yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking back, I think he might have just saw where the ball landed and thought I was talking about how long the throw was. But I think a lot of people didn't see it because we were standing back from it and trying to look through a cage. Because I'll be honest, again, the media whore in me, I got the phone out. The next two throws they got, I got the phone out and I says, well, I'm getting this next time round, I'm getting this. And he didn't do it. He didn't do it for either of the next two throws they got in a similar position. I have no idea why. And then obviously the clip goes viral of him trying to do it later in the week and it not quite pulling off. But look, Gav, it is important to give the context without going too deep into it or boring people. It is important to give the context around the Kennedy Cup. The Kennedy Cup has been an unbelievable tournament for the last forever. I've seen 13 in a row, excluding the ones that were missed because of COVID. And it has been a tournament where basically the best 13-year-olds or 12-year-olds, it's kind of bounced between under 13 and under 14 level all over the country, descend on this, you know, one spot. I threw up the team sheet there from a couple of years ago where Nathan Collins and Jason Knight were in the DDSL team, you know, and you'll regularly see that. To be honest with you, you'll see just as many All-Ireland hurling and Gaelic football winners of future years down there as well when you look back through. I hold on to the programme, so I have all the old team sheets and that. It's mad, the names that come up. Okay, it's not that anymore. It's not that anymore, and it's important to state that. So because of the whole situation with the under-14 League of Ireland, and again, we won't go mad into it, but a lot of, even when they decided to kick the kickoff of the under-14 League of Ireland back to July to allow players to play their Kennedy Cup, most League of Ireland clubs went ahead and signed the players in January anyway. Okay, so you have, take for example, the DDSL, who normally win the thing pretty much at a canter, truth be told. And people are going, wow, you know, DDSL beaten in the semi-final, you know, drew a couple of group games and all that. Well, the DDSL used to be the best 20 players in Dublin. The DDSL now, you're into the hundreds because Shamrock Rovers have signed 20 of them. Pats have signed 20 of them. Bows have signed 20 of them. Shells have signed 20 of them.
Drogheda, Dundalk,
Bray. You know, you're well into the hundreds here in terms of who was actually lining out for them. So that has obviously massively, massively diluted their quality. And that applies right across the board. I mean, you look, it's an interesting one, actually. The Cork and Waterford ended up in the final. Cork City have signed an under-14 panel. Cove have signed an under-14 panel. Waterford United have signed an under-14 panel. And yet these two clubs, these two leagues, were still able to make the final, which shows the strength and depth that's there. I mean, the academy director at Waterford was kind of jokingly saying, you know, just kind of question marks over me as whether we've signed the right 20, given that these 20 went on and got to a Kennedy Cup final. Whereas, you know, I can only speak from experience with Treaty. Treaty didn't sign any players. We're literally we're holding a trial tonight. We're literally trying to pull together a squad now for a league that's starting in a week and a half's time. So you would have thought that would have given Limerick teams and Clare teams and that a serious advantage. But no, Cork and Waterford were still very, very good. Wexford Utes hadn't signed any players. That showed in the Wexford team. Wexford team, they were beaten in the semi-final, but they were the best team I'd saw down there all week. And one little quick one for you. It's amazing. The right winger for Wexford, I thought he was fantastic. Fantastic. So I went looking at the team sheet, and the surname, because it's distinctive, jumped out at me straight away. Witcherly was the surname. Ryan Witcherly. And I kept going, Witcherly. Where the hell have I come across this before? When I was Wexford Youth's manager, Gav, we used to run summer camps. I had him in a summer camp as a five-year-old, and remember thinking, Jesus, this lad's a little diamond. He's a brilliant bit of stuff. And this is the first time I'd seen him in 7 years, and here he was, absolutely rampaging down the right wing. It's brilliant when you see stuff like that. So it is. But no, look, really, really enjoyable week down there. It's fantastic for the players. And just, you know, a bit of tweaking maybe between the SFAI and the League of Ireland just to get that pathway. The best way for me to sum it up, Gavin, is any situation where parents are confused as to whether their kid should be gearing themselves towards a Kennedy Cup, or are they supposed to be gearing themselves towards an underage League of Ireland, or any pathway where the parent doesn't know where they stand is a broken pathway. So it just needs a bit of fixing. For me, it's a no-brainer. Kennedy Cup goes 13. You know, you play with your local schoolboy club from the age of 6 or 7 all the way up till you complete your Kennedy Cup. Then you step into an under-14 League of Ireland side, if that's the level that you're at, and you kick on your football education from there. To me, it's a no-brainer. Politics sometimes gets in the way of stuff that's a no-brainer. But I think there's a chance it might happen. I'd love to see it happen.
It happened before, obviously, when the national leagues were getting set up, that traditional schoolboy clubs would have had links with League of Ireland clubs, and sometimes those links would become fractured. But I think other clubs, like, say, I'm using them as an example, because I remember speaking to people there, and obviously Colin Hawkins would be involved there. Like, they'd be a decent club, but they wouldn't be a traditional, say, big massive club in the DDSL or whatever. But they're putting serious effort now into that younger age group to use as a springboard to get them into the National League, and actually working a lot more so in tandem. So, for example, like Teo Adaramola, who's with the 21s and Crystal Palace, would have first played with and then gone to Kevin's, because it was still at that kind of thing where you had to go to Kevin's, or you had to go to Cherry Orchard or a Belva or whatever. Whereas that's changing now, you know what I mean? So, like, and clubs like Moctis are kind of seeing, well, you know what, working with the League of Ireland clubs and taking it is actually a bit that pathway, even at a younger age, like what Shane says, the 5-year-old, the 6-year-old, 7-year-old, having those academies and getting ball mastery even to a level that isn't seen for even a lot of kids, and getting that ingrained in them, and then having that link, so it's actually a lot more of a partnership with the League of Ireland clubs, rather than like it was at the start, where it was almost like forced upon them a little bit and they had to have a partnership with them. Like, you saw it with, like, Pats had about, I think, four or five different clubs, and all those faded away really, because they realised it wasn't really of much benefit, you know.
Do you know who was playing for the DDSL, and I can't quite wrap my head around it, or how he comes to be playing for the DDSL? Adam Ida's brother. He's about 6 foot 3, right winger, big powerful fella. But I'm not sure Is he travelling from Cork up to Dublin, or have the family moved to Dublin since Adam moved across? Or I'm not really sure how, but it was definitely his brother. I asked one or two FAI officials and they said, yeah, it's his brother, all right.
That's interesting, because even like one of his good friends, Jay's Cabia, moved up when he went to play for Shells and he left. Was it Cove? Was it Cove he left?
Yeah.
And he was young enough, and he would have moved up, and he was living with a family in Clonee, but... Be interesting, but like that's been, unless he's is like, because what has happened before where players from different parts of outside Dublin would have come up and played for Dublin clubs. But as you said, if Cork were actually doing well, it's surprising that there's not a club there that he would have he'd be involved with, you know.
That I'm quite relieved we'd gone almost a full show without Shane Keegan taking credit for a player's development, so I'm glad that we got that in right there at the end.
Sorry.
I wanted to ask you, because I saw something when I was doing my morning death scroll on Twitter, having me a cup of coffee. What's this? Did you use a cut turf, Gav?
I used a foot turf. Well, yeah, you had a foot turf at home, yeah.
I saw you tweeting pictures of some fella in Longford rolling turf or stacking turf or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought it was your new calendar.
But David, we all did. That's what you do outside of Dublin.
Oh yeah, it'd be like the summer sentence. You go, you'd foot it, and then you leave it for a while, and then you'd drive the tractor down, throw it in the trailer, and bring it home. It was just fucking. It was backbreaking, horrendous work. I got so scared I went into media, because therefore I didn't have to do any work. It was great.
What age were you doing that?
I'd say from the age of about 8 or 9 up until 16, 17, 18, I'd say. Do it every summer, like, you know. As a family, you know, that would be one of the few family trips.
So you wouldn't go on holidays?
To the bog. We'd go on holidays sometimes, but like we'd always be going to the bog every summer. It's awful. it's really terrible. So I'm reading a lot of people lamenting the end of turf cutting, etc. Bring it on, is what I say. I don't think anyone should have to go through that, you know.
Okay.
And it is on that important note which will end this week's podcast. David Snow, thanks very much.
No problem. Take care.
Shane Keegan, thanks very much.
Cheers, man.
Thanks, Emma, for joining us earlier on as well. Get in touch with us. All those details are in the episode description of this podcast. We're back next week. Until then, take it easy.
It's funny, but when I love you seem to open up, you say, come on board, I can show you the world. I need a drink, it helps me open up. No, it wouldn't hurt. Lead me in. Freaks me out, you touch my feeling skin, hovering above this midnight strain. Pour my innocence, a lethal gin, I'll take the morning train. Is it love? It's fair to ask. I dream of a bar in a dark, creamy beverage with you. You don't seem to care. I offer you a drink, your guitar fell. Come a little closer, I'll pick it up for you. Hold the door, it's really busy, dear. The seep and sweat in here. I reach the bar, I know what you need. I stretch my arm, they don't serve anymore. It's is it love? It's fair to ask. I dream of a bar and a dark, creamy beverage with you. Is it love? It's fair to ask. I dream of a bar and a dark, creamy beverage with you. Is it love? Is it love?